Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Outreach with Reggie podcast. My name is Reggie Holloway, your host. And if this is your first time listening to OWR, welcome. If you're returning, welcome back. And I pray that you come, you listen, you're able to learn, and you can share and create conversations around this episode. Now, with that being said, today, we're not going to do surface level conversation. We're not going to do social media takes. We're not going to do who's right and who's wrong. We're going to do self-examination. Because the title of today's episode is Black on Both Sides. Yes, inspired by Black on Both Sides by Mos Def. And that album wrestled with identity. It wrestled with contradictions. It wrestled with being conscious, but still flawed. Being aware, but still navigating the system. And that's where I want to sit today. Because a lot of us, especially Black men, are living split lives. Split in language. Split in culture. Split in loyalty. Split in ambition, split between who we were raised to be and who we are walking into becoming. And if we don't address the split, we are liable or at risk to pass it down to generations after us. So let's talk. The first thing I want to talk about is code switching. Because as we are split within language, one of the biggest things we split is how we talk depending on where we are in the environments that we participate in and walk into every day. So before I go into that, let me ask you a question. Have you ever been told you talk white? Not, oh, you talk very educated. You talk, not so much as you articulate yourself very well or you sound like you read a lot of books. No, you talk white. That phrase, not at all, is harmless to any degree. It's a very loaded phrase. It implies that intelligence or to be smart or to be intelligent or the synonyms of intelligence wrap itself into having a race, that professionalism or to be a professional, a leader, a confident speaker has a race because that clarity belongs to somebody else. But here's the truth. We know within language, linguistics, and one of the biggest linguists is African American Vernacular, or AAVE, that itself is not broken English. In the 1970s, linguist William LaBeouf demonstrated that AAVE follows consistent grammatical rules. It's systematic and structured. But in professional America, it is also penalized within seen as slang or seen as very inappropriate language. We live in a country where speech patterns impact opportunity. Depending on how you talk, will be depending on how high you are able to get in the companies that you're aiming for in a professional setting. How you say things, little things, big things, is under a big microscope. A study from the University of Chicago and Stanford showed that resumes with Black-sounding names receive significantly fewer callbacks than identical resumes with white-sounding names. So what do we do when faced within attempting to navigate systems that don't feel like it's meant for you. We adapt. We code switch. Because you don't talk the same in the boardroom that you would talk on the block. You don't talk to a judge the same way you talk to your cousin. And that's not betrayal. That's navigation. But within navigating systems, navigating ultimately being a black man in America, there's tension that arises internally. And as you're self-examining within real time, within the moment that you choose to unintentionally code switch or unintentionally betray who you feel like is your most authentic self, there's tension and an internal fight. Some of us started navigating these systems, navigating being black in America so young that we forgot what voice was natural. Oftentimes enough, it could start as early as school, in grade school. Favor amongst students that may be the opposing race. Being told to talk a certain way, to dress a certain way, to keep yourself with a level of having a different mindset. But oftentimes enough, attempting to navigate things like school or anything that you participate in, you can oftentimes feel like you're not being your most genuine self. And now authenticity feels like rebellion. And now professionalism feels like assimilation or a loss of identity, pseudo, fake. And now you're stuck in between. Black on one side, assimilated on the other. Or dealing with the sense of feeling like you're dealing with false identity. But what if integration is different than assimilation? Assimilation says to erase yourself, erase your identity, who you are, to shape yourself into systems that aren't meant for you, to fit the mold of corporate America. Rather, integration says to expand yourself, to build upon who you are, and to walk within that authenticity, and to walk into spaces that will appreciate that and won't depreciate who you are. And if you find yourself currently in that position where you're doing more assimilating than integrating, then I challenge you to maybe walk into better integrating rooms or spaces that allow you to be you. Now, within that, there's an identity that goes into that. As you are navigating these systems, these rooms, these settings, and as you find yourself further along the way within the assimilating of who you are to fit a mold, to fit a puzzle piece that won't quite fit, there's an identity that goes into what we perceive, what we perceive our successes to be, what we perceive where we can go, how far we can go. And I want to talk about that within this next segment. I remember talking to somebody recently, and within talking to them, talking about life, religion, success, and love, I remember them talking to me about, they said something very disturbing. And they said, Man, I'm from the trenches. I don't think I tried, man. Kind of giving it the tone and the undercarriage of that statement as the disbelief that something could be genuine, something that can be pure, something that could be, obtainable. An ideology that breeds stagnation. Because that phrase carries weight. That phrase carries the weight of pain, survival, and credibility. And it struck me because I myself come from a very critical background. For those who don't know my story, I grew up a big portion of my life in the foster care system of Georgia for 17 years and stripped from my family. And now navigating, having to navigate high school and college without family. And even now, where I am, some will perceive that to be a success story. Oftentimes enough, giving the misconception that I haven't had a hard life, but nevertheless, the phrase, I'm from the trenches, almost just feels like a disqualifying of self, that they can't make it past a certain level before the situations that they will face throughout the duration of life. Is too hard and too heavy to navigate. And as the phrase that, and as that phrase, my apologies, carries weight of pain, survival, and credibility, it also, for many of us, carry truth. But within that truth, we are able to recognize that America didn't accidentally create spaces, grounds, communities that breed not only poverty, but poverty mindsets, mindsets that would breed survival modes, survival minds, and traumatic experiences off of the byproduct of systematic practices. And one of those practices is redlining, as we recognize at home. Home is the introduction to what we understand the world to be. And redlining policies at the time, that being in the 1930s, literally marked black neighborhoods as hazardous for investment. The Federal Housing Administration backed loans as well for white families in suburbs, while black families were denied of these same loans. The average white family today holds roughly 8 times the wealth of the average black family. In short, that those gaps are policy driven, not of personal failure. But as there was a significant rise in poverty amongst black and brown communities, it breeded mindsets that could only get so far. Even the ones who wanted to reach out and go more found themselves running into fatigue of trying to climb that hill. And as many of you, especially for my black men out there, it's not an easy task to do to continually climb, climb and climb to climb to sniff the, eventually obtain the amount of success that you would deem as success. But many of us work off of an engine or work off an ideology or even attach the things that we experience to who we are as what we are to the world. But if I can, I want to pose a question. When survival becomes your identity, no matter where you're from geologically, right? When you take on the phrase, I'm from the trenches, when survival becomes your identity, what happens when you don't have to survive anymore? What happens when you get that degree, you get that trade, you get that paying job, you run your own company, or you become the CEO of that company you always dreamed about? You become the celebrity. You become everything that you ever wanted to be. What happens when you don't have to survive anymore? Some people don't know how to function outside of crisis because crisis gave them a purpose. Crisis gave them something, a fire to light under them. Some people work a whole lot better under crisis. They don't work good when the waters are still. I remember this famous boxing quote says that it's hard to get up at 5 in the morning when you're wearing silk. I think it was silk pajamas or sleeping on silk sheets or something like that. But pretty much, if struggle gave you credibility, then peace can oftentimes breed or feel like weakness. And growth can feel like betrayal. Growth can feel like you're betraying your friends, old friends that recognize you from a time where you were in a low space, old family members who recognize you or have attached who you are and your identity to a temporary moment in time. But now that you are growing, you move to a better neighborhood, and suddenly, oh, you're acting different. Or you start speaking differently, and suddenly you're walking into slowly but surely everything you ever prayed about. Some perceive that as, oh, you're acting brand new. No, maybe you're healing. Maybe you're expanding. Maybe you're building. But trauma, and oftentimes trauma bonds, doesn't always want you to leave. People who can't have access to you anymore want you, don't want you to leave because they too see the growth in you, even if you don't see it yourself right away. Because sometimes it and they in spaces that are familiar with your trauma want you to relive it and want that identity and ideology to stay with you and ultimately them forever because it's familiar. And familiarity breeds comfort. But one cannot grow in comfort. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the split. So, as we talk about how we use and how we carry the ideology and mindset of trauma and how we use survival to tell who we are and what we believe, but what our beliefs are. I want to talk about something very critical, and that is the performance of pain, the performance of these beliefs. And one of the biggest things I can say I see that showing up more in is hip hop. So let's talk about hip hop. Because hip hop is ours. It's our culture. It's resistance. It's beautiful storytelling. From the Nas to Mos Defs, the Jay-Z's, the Kanye's, to Drake's, to Kendrick's, the J. Cole's, the anybody under the sun. It's storytelling. It's poetry. But it's also a billion-dollar industry. For over a decade, hip hop has been one of the most consumed genres in America. That means its messaging is under a very big microscope, and its messaging matters. And somewhere along the way, pain became performance, performative, to express all of the things that you've went through, having to navigate to get to where you are today. Pain became performance. Violence became the aesthetic. Ops, or to have ops, became identity. But before I continue, do not get me wrong. Conflict has always been a part of storytelling. Conflict, violence has always been a part of storytelling. It's always been artistic, if you will. But social media has changed the incentive structure. As in, you can see it all now, right? It's like ancient Rome or modern day Rome, the theater, seeing two soldiers or two warriors lash it out for the world to see in a big arena. And now the arena is social media and the internet. Now controversy equals engagement. Beef equals clicks. Chaos equals algorithm boost. You don't just have ops. You brand them. You monetize them. And young boys that are watching all of these things happen online are internalizing it. If your value comes from who you're beefing with, and if you crave, like ancient Rome, the violence, the blood, the hatred, peace, love, kindness, those things can become very boring very quick. But peace, unlike violence, the foundation of peace builds and is strong while beef burns. And in within beef and violence and any negative connotation and actions, the foundation of that is very weak, brittle, crushing. But that's a decision and a choice to walk into peace and to walk into patience. My bad. To walk into peace or destruction. And we need to talk about it honestly without condemning culture, but also without romanticizing destruction either. So we talk about how pain is performed. Because as well as rap to be this way, rap is an avenue that can provide what you may deem to be success. That being of monetary gain or a platform, a launching pad to something greater. And for those who are able to see success, or those who are able to find success to great heights, the Jay-Z's, the Will Smiths, the Kanye's, the many others, Nas's, right? There's always an association to wealthy Black people or Black people who find themselves in a very successful time by doing the hard work. And this may be controversial, but the question I pose is, why do some people assume that wealthy Black people are Illuminati? Because where does that really come from? Let's be honest. There is historical reason for mistrust. If we look at COINTELPRO, the FBI's counterintelligence program, surveyed and disrupted Black political leaders in the 1960s. Coalitions like the Rainbow Coalition analyzed Martin Luther King Jr., the Black Panther Party, even to the point where they used a gentleman by the name of William O'Neill to infiltrate. There were infiltration tactics. There were manipulations. So suspicion was survival. But suspicion can evolve into stagnation. Now, what if a Black man wants to build wealth like a Jay-Z? The question becomes, well, who did he sell out to? I remember seeing recently that a rapper by the name of La Russell, he just signed to Roc Nation. And some people felt like, oh, he sold out, without knowing the real truth. And why do we think when a black man builds wealth, the question is, who did he sell out to? And not ask, what did he invest in? Did he invest in himself? What tactics did he use to develop a mindset, hard work, a work ethic, consistently showing up for himself and the things that he was pouring into? I wonder why we don't ask those questions when we see black men with wealth. Meanwhile, white wealth in America was always structurally protected. The GI Bill after World War II expanded home ownership and college access, but black veterans were often blocked locally. So wealth compounded for some, installed for others. That's not conspiracy, that's policy. So when we reduce every successful black person to secret societies, the Will Smiths of the world and many others, and the list goes on and on. I'm pretty sure that there's several people that they attempt to associate success to secret societies. But when we reduce every successful black person to secret societies, we erase strategy, successful strategy. We erase discipline. We erase the vision that was given onto them to walk in it. And worse, we teach the next generation that success equals corruption. And that mindset keeps us small. So, what does it mean ultimately to be black on both sides? It means that I don't have to amputate parts of myself to fit into rooms that aren't quite meant for me, to assimilate. I don't have to assimilate. I can integrate. I make way to be my most authentic self without having to change how I talk, how I walk, how I dress, how I wear my hair, and how I speak confidently. It means I can sit in policy spaces, in spaces not only in my community, but in other community to make effective change and still understand the block. It means I can quote research while also quoting rap too. It means I can build wealth and still build community. It means I refuse false choice and false identity because the system believes but benefits when we are split within our own community and split within ourselves. When we argue over tone instead of ownership, when we debate slang instead of equity, when we idolize struggling instead of building sustainability, integration is power, not assimilation, not abandonment of self. Integration. That's maturity. And that is how we move and evolve. So when I look at the album, when I think about what does it mean to be black on both sides, I truly think that no matter where you grow up, if you have a single mom, or if you have a big family, no matter how high you go, if you choose the 4-year thing or if you choose a trade, if you make your own way, carve out a piece of life and make it your own, you both have the same struggle. You're both having the opportunity to navigate being Black in America. And it's not an easy path, but it's a path that I commend you on doing, showing up, even if no one sees the pain, the sadness that you carry. I understand. So let me speak directly to the young Black man listening right now. You don't have to prove your Blackness through struggle. You don't have to carry that false mindset. You don't have to sabotage your own growth to stay relatable to your friends, relatable to your family, relatable to your loved ones, relatable to jobs, systems, things that you engage with every day, just to make the world feel like you understand them. You don't have to dim your light or your vocabulary to fit in. And you don't have to fear success like it is betrayal. We can critique culture and still love culture. We can still call out when things, people, and places are wrong, because we can be very wrong too. But we can still choose to walk in critique with love. We can acknowledge trauma without worshiping it, without creating trauma bonds, and recognizing. Instead, we can recognize that there's healing that needs to be done. And instead of acknowledging your trauma, well, instead of creating the ideology around trauma to work off it, we can create systems where spaces are allowed to confront trauma and head and work on healing. We can honor where we're from without being trapped there in our mind, in the spaces that we are in, to make better steps towards the future. You can be Black on both sides, whole, integrated, grounded, and expanding. That's not selling out. That's leveling up. And if this episode stirred something in you, sit with it. Share it with a friend. And spark conversation around it. Journal it. Talk about it. Share it. Because transformation doesn't start with shouting about it. It starts with reflection. This has been Outreach with Reggie. My name is Reginald Holloway, but Reggie will be just fine. And I'll see you next time. Take care.